So we asked Sarah Clark, and many of you are familiar with Sarah. She was actually going to be one of our speakers at our convention this year that we didn't have, and she was actually going to talk about stress management at that convention. It's a topic area for her that is very familiar. Sarah started out in her career as a vision rehabilitation therapist. She works with people with disabilities and people who are losing vision and specializes in that area, and also works with professionals to help them learn techniques and be more aware when working with people with disabilities. And she lives in Indianapolis, and she comes highly recommended by her colleagues and professionals. I am very happy to turn it over to Sarah.
Hello, everybody. I hope you guys are having a good evening, and thanks for joining me tonight. So as Barbara mentioned, the topic is going to be on strategies for managing stress. And this has been a pretty popular topic this year with everything that's been going on. And it's something that a lot of us may have strategies for under certain circumstances, but when things get turned upside down, we don't cope as well as we usually do. So tonight I'm going to go over some different strategies. Some might seem really obvious, but we tend to forget them. And some might be a little bit more complex. Maybe there's some you haven't heard about. But I'll try to break them all down into little pieces so that it'll be easy to follow along. And as Barbara mentioned, I am going to take breaks throughout so that you guys can ask questions. So I'll talk about a couple strategies, and then I will let you guys make some comments and questions and, you know, ask anything that might be helpful for me to clarify as we go. All right. So one of the first ones I'm going to talk about tonight is an approach we call cognitive reframing. But in layman's terms, all that means is changing how we're looking at things. And this is something that we often forget to do, or we forget how powerful it can be, because the stress that we feel when things happen, when negative things or just overwhelming things in our lives happen, the stress is not directly linked to what that event is. The stress is actually linked to what we're thinking about that event. And so that's why there's people that respond very, very differently to stressful situations. Sometimes there's people that thrive in stressful situations. Sometimes there's people that really struggle and have a hard time coping. And then there's a lot of people in between. And this is all based on their perceptions of their experiences. So I'll break down the cognitive reframing a little bit, maybe using some examples of stuff we're going through now. So everybody knows we're in the middle of a pandemic, which is not something most of us have experienced before. And there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of stress that people experience as a result. But not everybody is dealing with it in the same ways. And I'm sure all of you have examples of this, you know, people who are struggling more than others, people who have different perspectives on it than others. And so this is a good example of how what we're thinking about changes the way that we are reacting. So one way to think about it is when the pandemic started, there were a lot of people who were asking me what advice I was giving to people during this time of uncertainty. And when there's so many things that we just can't predict and can't control. And I was a bit baffled by the question and had to pause a little bit the first time I got the question, because I felt like my first response might have been not accurate. But after I've had some time to think about it, my first response is exactly what I'm still saying today, which is there's never been certainty. Our lives are not predictable. We cannot control things outside of ourselves. But sometimes we give ourselves an illusion of control, and all of our worries and anxieties and concerns are based on trying to predict and plan and come up with backup plans and different scenarios to try to mitigate the uncertainty. But it helps people very often to remember that things are only as uncertain as we allow them to be. And if we acknowledge that there are a lot of things outside of our control and focus on the things that are within our control, we are much more likely to cope well with the situation. So there's a really good quote that I use frequently that says, when we change the way that we look at things, the things we look at change. And that's a really good way of describing the cognitive reframing principle I'm talking about right now. Because if you look at things as awful, terrible, stressful, the worst thing that could ever happen to you, you're going to be upset. You're going to have a really strong negative emotional response to that. But if you look at it and say, okay, what aspects of this are within my control? How does this impact my life? And how can I shift to come out of this the other side stronger? And people that I've been working with for a long time since the beginning of the pandemic, I've seen a wide range of responses. And there are people that within the first couple weeks, you know, once the dust settled and they realized what was going on, they started making plans for how can I thrive during this time? How can I make the best of it? How can I use this time for self-improvement? You know, all different examples of what is a way that we can make this a good situation for ourselves and the people that we love. So that same principle can be applied to anything. We can view things as terrible, or we can view things as looking at them for what the reality of it is, and then choosing our perspective on it, choosing our reaction. And that leads into the second approach, which is shifting our focus of control from an external locus to an internal locus. So all that really means is if it's something outside of your thoughts, your actions, your behaviors, your responses, it's not within your control. And that is the stuff that we oftentimes fixate and focus on to try to handle or solve problems. And having that external locus of control, meaning focusing on all the things that are outside of our realm of control, is very, very anxiety provoking because there really is no solution. You might think you have a good solution. Sometimes we guess things correctly and it turns out the way we want them to. Sometimes we try to control things or people around us in order to have a illusion of control. But just in general, focusing on the external is going to cause stress and discomfort. So if you can shift to the internal locus of control, which is again, your thoughts, your behaviors, your responses to things, it will automatically reduce stressful thoughts and stressful feelings. You won't feel overwhelmed quite so much if you're taking action in that way. So let me pause there before I move on to the next couple ones, because those are actually the two of the most complicated ones I'm going to go over tonight. And I want to see if anybody wants me to describe them a little bit more or clarify anything before I go forward.
Okay. I unmuted myself. Is Carrie, have you unmuted everyone? Sherry, can you unmute?
I just unmuted myself. I assumed she unmuted everyone, but apparently not. Does anyone have any questions? If you need to unmute yourself, it's, go ahead.
Could you give a very simple question, an example, I mean, of shifting the locus of control when the external control is controlling? And how can we best help ourselves and our families during the upcoming difficult holidays?
Okay. So a good simple example of shifting control would be, let's say, this is one thing we've always, all of us, I'm sure, have experienced as people with visual impairments. If our ride is late or doesn't show up, it's, you know, something that we're struggling with, you know, we get stressed out sometimes, we get frustrated, we start getting upset about it. And we get upset about it if we're focusing on whoever it is that's supposed to be picking us up, whether it's Open Door or Uber or friend or family member, we focus on that situation. This shouldn't be happening. I can't believe they're this late. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Worrying about, you know, are you going to be late for where you're trying to go? All those types of things. That's the focus of an external locus. But an internal locus shift would mean saying, okay, my ride's late. I have to get to such and such place by this time. What can I do about that? And not getting upset, not getting stressed, not panicking, but just saying, okay, this didn't work. I can't make somebody show up. I can't make them drive faster. So what can I control? Which is staying calm, staying relaxed, and going to plan B, which mm-hmm. is reach out to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so that's just one simple shift. But sometimes the things are more complicated, right? Like if we're worried about COVID, you know, if we're worried about catching it, if we're worried about a family member, we have to take a step back from that and say, okay, so are my thoughts focused on things that are in my control or things that are outside of my control? Because there are things that you can do, you know, all the CDC guidelines, washing your hands, wearing a mask, you know, taking those precautions that are 100% within your control to do. Mm-hmm. Sitting at home and worrying about it and saying, I can't do anything. I can't go anywhere. There's just too much fear for me to do anything with what's going on in the world. That's the external locus. And that's mm-hmm. what creates so much fear and anxiety mm-hmm. because you're focused on the unknowns, the mm-hmm. things that you can't control. Mm-hmm. And when people do take a step back from that and say, okay, so here's how I'm going to act and react to this. Here's the response that I'm going to have. Here's the way that I'm going to prevent myself from being overly stressed about this. And I'm going to choose my own thoughts and feelings about it. And then your actions will align with it. Your stress level will automatically decrease with that. Mm-hmm. Does that clarify a little bit? I wasn't sure who asked the question.
What about the holidays?
Yes, the holidays. That's the second part to the question. So I think everybody's way of handling this is going to be very, very unique to the different situations. And so the way to shift and reframe and focus on that internal locus of control would be to say, okay, given the reality of my own situation, my loved one's situations, acknowledge what the reality of that is, and then decide how can I make the best of that? Because everybody's going to be handling the holidays differently this year. I've mm-hmm. talked to so many people that are going to try to do it the same way they always have and to just take a few more precautions than they usually would, you know, wear masks or, you know, hope for nice weather and do it outdoors. There's people who are going to just do smaller groups for holiday gatherings. There's people who are going to do virtual holiday gatherings and get everybody together on a Zoom call like this. And mm-hmm. really, it'll be different. It'll absolutely be different, but it doesn't have to be negative. And mm-hmm. that's the part to shift your focus to is given mm-hmm. whatever the circumstances are for you and the people that you usually spend your holidays with, mm-hmm. how can I make the best of this situation? And what mm-hmm. aspects of this do I have control over to manage it? Mm-hmm. the best that I can, mm-hmm. because we can't take away the virus. We can't, mm-hmm. you know, control how everybody's feeling or how they're coping, but you can still be there for the people in your lives, even if you're not physically present.
Mm-hmm. And, go ahead. This is Barbara, Sarah. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, just trying to call on your creative energy within you to say, okay, I may not be able to do this the way I'd like to do it, or I've done it before, but what can I do with this to make it still fun? And I, for example, our kids did this a couple of times with us. I expect we might do something like this again. they are in different parts of the country, but we did a Zoom call, everyone together, you know, and just kind of, we ate snacks together, mm-hmm. you know, sat around the table eating our snacks and talking and just kind of showing each other stuff and, you know, stuff like that. We did it for, I think it was Father's Day, and we did it for Mother's Day and blah, blah, blah. I anticipate we might do something like that for Christmas, you know? So just thinking creatively, and we didn't even use a Zoom call. We did a, I forget now what it was, but anyway, the kids set it up. So, but yeah, just calling on some creative energies and letting that really carry you. So anyway, that was just a thought I had.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Cause yeah, the more creative you can get, the better, you know, if you can try to come up with a situation that's going to make you feel more comfortable, make you enjoy it a little bit more. And there are tons of ideas online now these days, now that we've had several months of doing this kind of thing, where people are doing online gatherings, online games, things like that. You know, if typically you'd sit around and play a board game with your family, now maybe you're going to do it online this year. Or there's some different apps that are helping people to connect and do things. But the biggest thing for everybody is to just connect in whatever way works for you. You know, just because we need to have social distancing and be more isolated physically than we usually are, does not mean that we actually have to be emotionally distant or just distant in general from the people we love.
Okay.
Any more questions? Okay. We'll let Sarah continue then.
Okay.
And everybody would meet.
Okay. So let's see here. All right, so the next strategy is a really simple one that we tend to sometimes forget or just not put as high on our list of priorities as it should be. But make sure you're getting enough good quality sleep. That is one of the top things for managing stress, because sleep deprivation in itself causes stress. It stresses your body, it stresses your neurological system. It doesn't allow your brain the rest that it needs to cope with everything that's going on. And so when we're feeling high stress, unfortunately, this is one of those weird circular things. If we're feeling high stress, we don't sleep as well. But when we don't sleep as well or get enough sleep, we feel more stressed. So it very much has to be a priority to make that happen. And there's plenty of ways that you can go about that. One of the simplest is just keeping a regular routine. You know, structure is something that went out the window for a lot of people when things started shutting down. And a lot of people started shifting to staying up later at night, sleeping in longer in the mornings, and just getting out of whatever their norm was. But if you start to prioritize sleep, you know, just like you'd set an alarm for getting up in the morning to go to work or, you know, go to a meeting or something, you can set an alarm for when you need to go to bed, but nobody ever does that. So it's a really easy thing that you can do that will help, because if you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, chances are you're doing things to zone out in the evenings, you know, watching the TV, watching the news, you know, scrolling through social media, playing games, whatever it is. You know, we all have our own little escapes, and we utilize them more than what's healthy during times of high stress. And it interferes with our sleep, because if you're staying up till midnight watching the news, I can almost guarantee you're not going to sleep well. And if you're not sleeping well, then you're going to be stressed the next day and feel overwhelmed. And then you'll just repeat that same pattern all over again. So whatever it is that you need to do to create a regular ritual for going to bed, you know, think about, for those of you that have kids or, you know, have had younger brothers and sisters that you remember growing up with, when we're when we're young, our parents have a pretty regular bedtime routine for us. You know, they do things in the same order around the same time to try to get their kid to fall asleep around the same time every night. And it's effective because that's what we crave as human beings. But as we get older, we stop prioritizing it, even though it's just as important when we're 50 as it is when we're 2. So think about maybe using that imagery for yourself for coming up with what's a healthy bedtime routine. You know, if you need to, because you lose track of time, set an alarm for when you need to start getting ready for bed, then start doing things that are going to be relaxing. You know, they say anything with screens is not going to be good. And I know this is probably something that we don't think about very much, especially those of us who are completely blind, but being in front of a screen, television, video game, movies, whatever it is, social media, that screen, even though we can't see it, is still affecting us. It's overstimulating our brains and not allowing us to relax. And the light impacts our brain's ability to release melatonin, which is what we need to have produced to help us fall asleep at night. And that's why our bedtime routine is so important, because at night, our cortisol, which is our stress hormone, needs to start decreasing so that we can sleep, and our melatonin needs to start increasing so we can sleep. But if we're doing things that are overstimulating, then those are not going to be in the correct balances. So whatever that needs to look like, maybe listening to a book before bed, doing some yoga, doing a meditation, maybe thinking about just putting on relaxing music or using like a sound machine or something, drinking some chamomile tea, whatever your ritual needs to be, you guys get to decide. It needs to work for you, and you might need to experiment with a few different things, but there's not going to be one solution to sleeping well. It's a pattern, it's a routine, it's a habit, and it's a combination of a lot of different things. So if you're having trouble with insomnia, I would say, you know, I can give you some more examples of things to do, but you can also just Google natural ways or, you know, habits for insomnia, and they'll give you tons of examples of things that are helpful. And then the next strategy is to practice being present focused. And mindfulness is kind of a buzzword these days, but it's extremely, extremely helpful for stress management. And you don't have to do any particular type. You know, if you're somebody that cringes at the term meditation, that's fine. You don't have to do meditation. But mindfulness practices or just being present focused will reduce your stress level, because you can't be anxious about things that might happen in the future if you're in the moment. And a lot of times when we're stressed, our thoughts are very future focused. So there are many, many techniques that you can use that will help you practice this, because we need to train our brains to do this just like we would train our muscles at a gym. So use that analogy and say, okay, I'm not going to be good at it the first time. It's not something that I can just try right off the bat and it's going to work well for me. Mindfulness practices do not work well for anybody the first few times, sometimes not even the first few weeks, but you just keep trying different ones till you find one that resonates, and then practice and practice and practice. Because if you were to go to the gym and work out after not ever doing any kind of weight training in your entire life, you wouldn't be very good at it, but you also wouldn't expect to be. But for whatever reason, our expectations of our minds and our thoughts are different than our physical expectations. So try to find a way that you can practice that fits with you. There are grounding exercises that are really basic that just focus on being in the present moment and identifying things around you based on using your senses. There are breathing exercises that you breathe in different rhythms or patterns for different purposes. There are dozens of different types of meditations that you can try. There are yoga practices that help with mindfulness. And there are times where you can just sit and breathe and think about one particular thing and try to not let your thoughts be distracted from that thing. And when they are distracted, you notice that you are distracted and say, okay, I'm not going to think about that right now. And you come back to whatever the focus is, because that's the goal with all the mindfulness practices, is just when your thoughts start to wander, bring them back to the present moment and whatever your intention is. So there's so many different types of this that I won't go over specific examples of how to do these things necessarily, unless one of you wants a basic breathing exercise or something like that that you can try. But there are great apps that will give you guided meditations and mindfulness practices. There's thousands of videos on YouTube that you can learn from. So depending on what your interests are, just search for those kinds of keywords. If grounding sounds better than meditation, try that. If meditation is something that you've tried in the past or have heard about and always wanted to try, you can try those things. So, and then let's see. Okay, I'm going to do one more before I break for more questions, just because I think this one is going to probably provoke a lot more questions than the sleep and the mindfulness. This one is to adapt and modify. And so this is something that people with visual impairments, I know, are already experts at. We get to be great at problem solving and great at identifying when one of our strategies isn't working, or, you know, our vision changes or something like that. We have to modify. We have to adapt. And this same principle is something that helps to reduce stress in times of crisis. So whether we're talking the pandemic or any of the other things going on in the world right now, we can adapt to whatever it is. You know, think about what I was talking about earlier with cognitive reframing. You know, the same thing goes with just taking action. You know, if you were somebody that prior to the pandemic used to go to the gym and work out regularly, and you stopped because your gym closed, there's a lot of people struggling with that dilemma right now. But the people that aren't struggling with it said, okay, well, I can't go to the gym today, even though that's what I would normally be doing. So what can I do? And they modified. They adapted. They either got some equipment that they could use at home, or even if they couldn't afford equipment, they found that there were exercises they could do without needing a lot of space or money or anything. You know, there's even this series of YouTube videos somebody told me about early on this year that this woman just does a whole workout routine with walking in place. So all you need to do is have the ability to stand up in a space that's clear and have a few feet of space around you. And that's it. And you can exercise. So adaptation is key to thriving during times where we would otherwise be stressed. Because if we can find a sense of normalcy again, we are going to feel much, much more comfortable. And that is something that a lot of people have struggled with this year, is that there's really no normalcy. You know, the things that we used to do are different. How we used to go about things are different. And our problem-solving skills need to be used during these times. We have to figure out, what is it that we used to do that we liked? What is it that really helped us to thrive? What are the things that we appreciated that we miss? And then find a way to adapt to make those things happen. It's not going to be the same, but it can still meet whatever needs you feel like are lacking. All right, so I'll pause there and open it up for questions or comments, or anybody that wants to share some experiences that they've had so far with things that they've adapted or things that they've tried that have helped with any of this.
Anyone have anything?
I have a question. Are there any particular apps that you would recommend for grounding, any particular anything online that you would recommend specifically?
Let me think here. The Calm app, it's just Calm, mm-hmm. is almost 100% voiceover accessible and has a lot of stuff for meditation and mindfulness. And they have a free version, and then they have a premium version. So with the free version, you can get a few of the meditations and you can get like relaxing music and some other things. There's a few others that I haven't tried recently, and I'm sure you guys have experienced this too, but sometimes they're accessible and then they do an update and they're not so much accessible. Mm-hmm. So I can't promise with these other ones, but the other two that are really popular are Headspace and Insight Timer. And all three of those have different types of mindfulness practices on them. But if you want something that's just really simple, I would say go to YouTube and then just find stuff that you like, because everybody is very different and usually very particular with what they like in terms of those kinds of practices. You know, even something specific like, you know, you like a particular type of meditation, but this one particular person's voice is annoying, so you can't relax. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, some people like a female voice versus a male voice. And you can find whatever it is that you're looking for with that. But off the top of my head, I can't think of any person in particular that I follow or recommend necessarily.
Okay. Thank you very much for the ideas.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Anybody else?
Hello.
Hi.
I was just going to recommend that the Dot has a good night routine now. You know, the Echo Dot that you
Okay.
You know, so if you just say good night to the Dot, I mean, if you wanted to, you know, you could set a reminder for bedtime and then you could just say good night and it'll play like relaxing sound that you choose or some, you know, something you have.
Perfect. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Is that something you have to set up or is it just ready to go built in?
Just tell her good night.
Awesome.
She won't say nighty night sleep type and tight anymore like she used to.
Okay. Well, that's an improvement.
Yeah.
You know, Sarah, yes. This is Barbara. You know, blind people in general have, you know, problems with, you know, sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I don't know what it is for everyone else, but for me, I have a lot of trouble shutting off, you know, shutting off the brain, because my brain is constantly working. And, you know, and so I have to really work at that. And I like the idea that you had about setting a timer or a alarm clock or whatever to go to bed or to prepare to go to bed. I think that was a good idea. And I mean, it's so simple, honestly, but it, didn't even think about it.
Sure.
And that way you start you can remind yourself it's time to, you know, put it all down now and start shifting your brain. So yeah, it, I think for me, my brain just never stops. So that's, yeah.
So there are even clocks now that you can set the time, you know, for them to start and they'll play music or a sound for an hour. You know, it's designed for little kids a lot, you know, because they might have a moon or something, you know, and then when it's time to go to bed, it disappears or something. But, you know, the music, like every time I go to one friend's house, they have little kids and their clock always goes off at 8 and then they're like, oh, it's jammy time.
Yeah. That's great. They should make more of those things for adults. We have to kind of come up with our own.
Yeah.
But yeah, you really do need something like that to help you get into a good rhythm with it. Cause you're right. Yeah. Like you have to shut your brain down and that's not always easy to do. It takes some effort. And, you know, it took me years to figure out what my routine was that allowed me to get the best quality sleep. And if I skip even one of those steps, I don't sleep as well. But, you know, it's everybody's unique.
Yeah. And they say that I've been told that if you take melatonin, if you are somebody that takes melatonin, that you really should take that within the hour or no more than an hour before you plan to be in the bed.
Yes. Yes.
So
I think usually 30 minutes to an hour max.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. And there are a lot of natural things that you can take, vitamins, supplements, just things that are not going to be like an addictive sleep aid that will help with relaxation, help with getting your body and your brain to shut down. I mean, I can't say specifically that I would recommend certain ones because everybody's health is different. And so there's certain ones that wouldn't be good for, you know, like in particular, like potassium, you have to be careful with that if you have diabetes or some kind of kidney problems. So, you know, I can't say like take these three or four things and you'll do great, but that's become really, really important for me and a lot of the clients that I work with on anxiety disorders are how do we find natural ways of getting your brain and your body shut down in the evening? And, you know, melatonin and things like that, chamomile, those are all great for sleep, but sometimes we need to figure out what is our body is lacking that's not allowing us to sleep.
Yeah. So, you recommend essential oils at all?
I love those. Yeah. I have an essential oil blend called Serenity. And I'm not sure if it really helps me sleep, but it smells good and it helps me just, you know, the smell of it is relaxing. So
is it doTERRA or?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, lavender, the smell of lavender, there's a few others. So there's a lot of people that say either, diffusing essential oils or just rubbing them on your skin or something can help with sleep. But then there's some other ones that you can research and talk to your doctor about in terms of just natural things like vitamin C lowers cortisol levels. So if you're an anxious person, you know, that would be something to do in the evenings or magnesium or potassium or these other things that help your muscles relax because a lot of times we don't sleep because of physical discomfort. So, don't just take any of them. You need to know if it's going to interfere with medications or health problems.
And this is quite an odd question, but essential oils do work primarily in the olfactory, right? They don't work. I mean, if you don't have a sense of smell, then they're not going to be effective, right?
It depends on how you use them. Cause some of them you can drink, like you put in water. You can drink. There's some that you rub in your skin and you absorb them.
Okay.
But yeah. Most people, if you're diffusing them in the air, it's more about the smell.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, sorry. Okay. Go ahead and finish your thought. I apologize.
No, that was odd. I don't have a sense of smell. I haven't had since college. So I know I would love essential oils. I love fragrances. Or I used to love fragrances. Right. So, but anyway. Okay.
Very I have a friend who doesn't have a sense of smell, but she diffuses oils to help her all the time.
Mm-hmm. Really?
So I don't know, you know, I can't tell you one way or the other. I don't know if it's psychological, but you know, maybe it's a good try.
I could see where rubbing it on your skin because, you know, would help or drinking it. Yeah, for sure. But anyway. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? We're almost at the end of our hour.
Okay.
Did you have more skills you were going to present? Because if not, I had a question.
Oh, overall. you can ask a question. Yeah,
I was just curious if, in your experience, you're finding that COVID is causing more anxiety or more depression, and if you have certain coping skills that work better for one versus the other.
That's a really good question. I have found that it's causing both, but which one it's causing is linked to what each person is predisposed to.
So if a
person has a history of depression, this would be one of those times where they would probably struggle more with it. And if somebody is just prone to high stress or an anxiety disorder, then, you know, things like this kind of kick it into overdrive. But I haven't really noticed a significant change in terms of one more than the other or people developing anxiety disorders or depressive disorders that weren't already predisposed or had a history of.
That makes sense.
Sometimes they things get exacerbated by situations and experiences.
You know, as far as COVID, and I guess sometimes it's, you know, it's so easy to focus on the most extreme situations because that's what really gets us, you know, and our attention. But there are so many people, and I've known people in our circles, you know, that had very light cases. Mm-hmm. Even one of our friends has an autoimmune disease, and she didn't even know she had it mm-hmm. until she lost her sense of smell. That's the only thing she got. And she is at high risk.
Right.
And she was over it in a week. Her sense of smell came back. So you really just don't know, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, it's always good to say, okay, yeah, the bad is out there, but there's also a lot of good, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of, positive things to focus on, where people have recovered and recovered well.
Yeah, that's a good thing to mention, because mm-hmm. you're right. There are bad things. There's always going to be bad things in the world. And there have been people that have suffered, have died this mm-hmm. year. Mm-hmm. But there are also a lot more that are okay and that are having, like you said, really mild cases. My dad and my stepmom got COVID fairly early on when it started. And, there are my dad and two other people that live in their household, and none of the other ones even got it. You know, they were sharing the same house, the same bathroom, sleeping in the same bed, and they didn't get it. So, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty and unpredictability with it. Mm-hmm. And so our anxiety and our stress makes us think of everything is going to be the worst case scenario when things are very rarely the worst case scenario. They can be, mm-hmm. which is why our anxiety makes us think about those things to try to mentally prepare us. But it's very rarely the worst case scenario. I mean, I've talked to probably 20 people this week who either have it or are in the process of getting over it, and they're all fine. They said like a bad flu or cold. Mm-hmm. But
has anybody tried playing the Alexa games as a stress reliever?
Oh, that's a good idea.
There's tons of them. I've got a battery that I go through every morning. This is Rich, by the way, for those who don't know my voice. There's one called Question of the Day. There's Common Knowledge. There's like a history challenge quiz. There's a music quiz where you can, you know, try to name the song. She'll also read.
Brain workout too, Rich.
There's brain workout, train my brain.
Jeopardy, even Jeopardy. Yeah.
Jeopardy, there's Volley Daily Trivia Skill.
Even like just random exercise workouts if you ask her to do an exercise.
She'll read like Wikipedia articles too, like on your favorite politician or your favorite actor or actress or any famous person or somebody in history. But that's a nice way to just forget about all the stress and all the negative news, you know. And if you can play games for a half hour or 45 minutes, like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to contact me, I've got a whole I left a few out, but I've got a whole list of them that I do, and they're just kind of helpful.
Great.
And that's a really good idea, honestly, that we need to be informed. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we would be foolish not to be informed, but we need to tune it out, you know, at some point and go do something you enjoy doing, you know, and to make your, so that you can make your brain be more positive, basically. I mean, make your attitude, make your emotions start to turn. So I think that's a very, very good suggestion. Whatever feeds you for 40 minutes a day or whatever, you know. I love that.
This is Regina Ronderhaar. I play cards sometimes as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I love playing euchre.
Yeah. Yay.
Thank you very much.
Somebody else start.
My name's Marilyn. And I don't have any trouble getting to sleep, but it's staying asleep is the big thing. It's sleeping an hour at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's usually stress related if you keep waking up.
No
it's
problem.
It's also a senior citizen syndrome, I think. I really do.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yep.
Marilyn, what were you going to say? You started to finish something. When she said it's stress related, what did you say? Marilyn?
No. I agreed with Rich about senior citizen, too.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I agreed with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's terrible. Then you can't get back to sleep. And that's worse than not sleeping at all.
That is stress related. I mean, you know, if you could do something in the evening that is not.
Well, I sleep very hard for 2 or 3 hours and that, then it's over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is kind of a senior thing, isn't it, Sarah? Kind of a.
It's more frequent in seniors, but it's usually related to something else. It's not just an expected thing with age. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a physical discomfort. Sometimes it's stress. Sometimes it's a hormonal imbalance because it's all more.
You see it much more in women than men. Men can just put their head down and sleep all night.
Yes. And in women, this is one thing that I always, always, always recommend with anybody I work with is if you're struggling with, sleep is get your hormones checked because obviously we all know women as we age, our hormones shift and they're a little bit lower at certain times, a little bit imbalanced. And so there are plenty of just natural things you can do besides, you know, the over the top, like hormone replacements, but sometimes it's stress, but the other part of that is there are certain hormone imbalances that will cause symptoms of stress or anxiety. Yeah. And so if there are sleep problems that are consistent or fluctuate off and on, you know, it's worth talking to a doctor about getting some blood work done, something like that, just because that is so frustrating. It could be something that's a really simple fix, like your thyroid's not working the way that it used to and it needs a little bit of a boost.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. That is so true. I think hormones, and we have to remember that we're not just talking about estrogen or whatever. Your thyroid is very important, and there are so many other hormones. So, and I know, you know, that it does affect sleep. I've experienced that. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Well, and that's kind of a good segue to the last thing that I wanted to bring up. And then I'll make sure if there's more questions that we have time for that. But a lot of times we tend to view things as either positive or negative in terms of our emotions and our responses to things. And I like to help people shift that to emotions are just emotions. They're information about what we're going through, what we're thinking, how we're handling things. And so just like I mentioned earlier about how we treat our physical bodies differently than we treat our minds, think of it as like pain, physical pain, if you injure yourself. You know, if you scrape a knee or you cut your hand or something, you're not going to say, ooh, I don't want to feel that. I'm going to pretend it's not there and just move on, distract myself, you know, try to think of other things, make it go away. You wouldn't do that because it's a physical problem that has a tangible solution to it. You know, you need to rinse out the cut or the scrape. You need to treat it, you know, put antibiotic stuff on it, put a bandage on it if need be. If it's really bad, you need to see a doctor. All of those kinds of things. We do first aid for ourselves with physical things, but we don't think of our mental health in the same way. And stress or sadness or anger or frustration or any of those emotions that we view as a negative, they're not negative. They're just emotional pain in the same way that we feel physical pain. And so if you shift the way that you're looking at those things, you won't avoid them. You won't try to pretend that they're not there. You'll try to think about, okay, why am I feeling this way? And what should I do about it? Because otherwise you either shift to that denial process or escape. And most of our unhealthy coping mechanisms are all about the escape, which is only temporary and sometimes makes the problem worse. But we very rarely think of it as how can we do some emotional first aid for ourselves? Mm-hmm. And so when we're feeling stressed or overwhelmed, there's a reason. And that reason needs to get dealt with. It can't just be something that we say, oh, yeah, and this is how it is. I'm just going to deal with it. Or I'm stressed, so I need to have another glass of wine. Like that's not how we would handle physical pain. And yeah. So those emotions, if we're viewing them as negative, we're not going to respond to them the same way that we could, which would be effective. So that's more of a perspective shift than an actual tangible strategy, but you can apply it in a lot of different ways. So maybe think about if there are some things that you're trying to avoid, evade, deny, cope with some things that maybe aren't so healthy. Think about, would you be doing that same thing if it was a physical discomfort or pain that you were going through?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. First of all, I just want to say hi. I know you.
Oh, okay. Hi.
Second of all, my question is, what if your issue doesn't just involve yourself and you can't deal with it because somebody else won't deal with it with you?
Hmm. Yeah, that does make it a little bit more complicated to sort through, but you have to bring it back to the part that you can control versus the part that you can't.
Okay.
Because if somebody isn't going to do their part, if they're not going to address it, if they're not going to participate in fixing it or even acknowledge that it's a problem sometimes, you still have control over how you handle it. Even if just the thing that you control is your response to the problem. And, you know, a really good example of that is when we deal with people in our lives with addictions. You know, this is, like I said, an extreme, but it's a good way to understand the concept, because we've all heard you should not enable a person's addiction. If they're an alcoholic, you don't hand them a drink. You know, you don't encourage them to drink. You don't support them while they're making those bad choices. And it's the same thing with less extreme situations. If they're in a bad situation and they're not making positive choices, then depending on what the situation is, obviously, will dictate your actions, but you have to focus in on what are the things that you can control about it. Is it just emotionally detaching from those outcomes because you know that that person isn't going to make that change? Is it trying to handle your part of the dynamic in that relationship and see if that does make a change just because you're thinking and acting in a healthier way? Or sometimes if it's a really toxic situation, sometimes your only healthy choice for yourself is to remove yourself from that dynamic.
Okay. Thank you.
So, I didn't recognize your voice, the voice that said you knew Sarah. So
my name's Abby.
Abby, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody have any other questions? Sarah, I assume you're doing teletherapy now.
I am, yes. Yeah, but actually, I was doing mostly that even before the pandemic with working with people with disabilities. And now it's transportation is not always the easiest or the best way to start a counseling session that's supposed to help you de-stress. So, and I work with people all over Indiana that wouldn't be able to get to me otherwise. And actually, I work with people in other states too. But
that's always one more thing a person can do if none of these other things seem to be helping them.
Yes, absolutely. You know, that physical pain equivalent is a good way to approach that as well. If none of the coping strategies or self-care strategies are working, you can always reach out to a therapist for telehealth. A lot of them do accept insurance. A lot of them are doing telehealth now. Insurance is now covering telehealth when a lot of them weren't previously. So there are a lot of resources now that weren't there before. There are support groups that used to be in person that are now online. There's a wealth of possibilities for ways to get whatever support a person needs.
Okay.
Any other questions for Sarah?
I got a quick one, Sarah. This is Rich again.
Sure.
I know your main thrust of your topic has been kind of what to do when you're shut in, and you've done a great job. You did a super. I've enjoyed this hour. Have you also taken the other approach with people that you've counseled and encouraged them to start getting out more now that the state is open? Because that's one thing that just helped me immensely. Is just,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like we don't have to stay home. You know, we can get out. We can go to restaurants because the tables are social distance. I know we all have different health concerns, and it's not about me. I don't mean to come off that way. Sometimes I do, and I apologize. But, you know, it's like once he opened the state, I started getting out. I wear my mask. I social distance. But as a visually impaired person, I go to grocery stores. I ride the bus. You know, and I'm blessed enough to, you know, God's given me the health to do that. But, you know, if you can get out, I think that is one of the best. Or if you can even have company in your house in small groups, you know, get some people together that are healthy. You know, and the not sick and so forth, maybe four or five people, or get together and play cards, get together and watch a movie, listen to music. I think that has helped me, you know, because I'm not shut in anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's plenty of ways to get out, even if somebody does have a higher level of risk and is a little bit more concerned about their health, there are still ways of getting out and being active that don't involve being around other people. You know, that we've had some pretty nice weather for this time of year.
You can walk your dog.
Yeah.
If you got it, I walk my dog.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or just sit outside, anything.
Yeah, I was going to suggest just even getting outside of the four walls of your house, even if it's just to take a walk in the neighborhood or to sit outside on your porch, or getting outside the four walls is extremely important, you know, and do whatever you can, whatever you feels comfortable for you to do, and wash your hands, wear your mask, and you know, so anyway, but yeah, so I'm glad to have the good weather we've had because it helps. So,
definitely.
So does anyone else have anything? Okay. You know, we have some new people here tonight. I'd like to know how you learned about it. How did you learn about the call?
Well, this is Abby, and I learned about it from a friend.
Okay. An ACB friend here. Okay.
They do work for ACB, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So, yes.
Okay. Well, very good. And Carlos,
I found it very, very informative as well. So thank you for opening it up to the public.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We want you to, we want the greater group, the greater community of blind people to tune in and, you know, learn along with us and be a part of these calls. So,
don't
Carlos,
make it your last time, Abby. It's good.
Yeah, don't make it your last time, Abby.
Well, thank you, guys.
And if you want to be on our information station call, maybe forward, we might be able to figure out something like that and put you on that list.
Just also, go to our website and sign up for that Indiana L.
And then also. Carlos Taylor was here. I don't know if he's still here. I don't know how he found out, but he's new to us. So,
And that was my fault, though.
Oh, that's what I figured. Okay. All right. Well, all right. So I really appreciate this, Sarah and Sherry. Thank you. It was really good, and it gives us all something to really kind of chew on and think about and maybe apply some of the tips and see if it can help us a little bit. I'm particularly interested in the sleep tips. So I want to just go over a couple things real quick. We will have our annual business meeting this Saturday at 10 o'clock. Please, 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 please join us. This is your opportunity to be a part of the organization and to support it. You will get the Zoom information for that call via the Indiana L list. You will also get very shortly here the nominating slate for the elections on Saturday will be sent out here in the next day or two. Okay. And then also the agenda, et cetera. We are looking forward to it and would invite you to attend. and encourage you to attend. Anyway, so, and I think Carrie, I don't know if she, I don't know if she's created that Zoom yet, but she will, and she'll get that out right away. Let me think. There was one more person that asked me. Oh, Pat Tussing asked me to make an announcement that she's going to be on participating in a discussion tomorrow night on Tuesday Topics. So she's excited about it and a little nervous, but she wanted me to announce that. Anything else? Does anyone else have any announcements or comments? Also ideas for future topics on Information Station. We would welcome those. So send them along. You can get our email. You can, there's a message link on our website. If you don't have the emails or whatever, you don't know how to reach us, there is a message link on our website, and that will come to me, as well as, I forget who else it goes to, but we will get that. And, but my email is also on the website. So reach out to us. Any ideas you have, we want to hear about them, because this is, you know, this is for you. So, okay. We will be having something, the second Monday of December. So we're hoping to do something holiday related, kind of fun. So we're going to be putting that together. So that will, our meetings are always going to be, our Information Station call meetings will be the second Monday of the month. So we will be doing something in December that is holiday related. So stay tuned for that. And, okay. Anything else from anyone?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks to everybody for coming along. And thank you again, Sarah.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.